हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 49, verse 47. Those devotees have attained the absolute limit of changelessness. Yet they playfully show all kinds of transformations while taking part in their Lord's pastimes. In both types of the Supreme Lord's pastimes, those predominated by the mode of opulence and those predominated by sweetness, the devotees who take part pretend to undergo transformations just to create the varieties that give the Lord pleasure. In Vaikuntha, there are no forces of nature to impel anyone to do anything he doesn't want to. The only force impelling the devotees is pure love, which makes them act extensively for the pleasure of Lord Narayana. Right? So everybody is situated on the platform, they're all equal poised, right? Because they're transcendental. But they go through transformations. In other words, they change the situations, change the different moods, change what they're doing, just to please the Lord. Right? So that's the whole thing. Because here, it's the modes of nature that generates transformation.
Yes.
Right? But there's no modes to impel that. So no one's being forced to do anything.
Yes.
Right? It's only because of their affection for the Lord. Therefore, there is all this transformation taking place. So that's the difference. Here, the variety is generated by force. There, it's generated out of affection for Krishna. Right? So that's the fun part. Here, all the change annoys us. There, the change is always makes them happy. Right? Because it's always about Krishna.
Yes.
So that means both what one's looking for in karma, the variety they have, and what's looking for in the jnana, the changelessness they have. So the perfection of karma and jnana they already have, you know, and unlimitedly greater.
So the so-called happiness of the material world is basically just relatively less unhappy than what we just came from. Sometimes transformation happens and we become happy.
Yeah, but then the next moment will be unhappy because it won't maintain. It'll transform again. So that's the thing, is the transformation may make us happy, may not make us happy. Right? But, and so that means our happiness and distress aren't actually our freedom. It's being imposed by the modes of nature. Yeah. 48. Thus, although equals, they manifest different individual variety. In that place, everything is so, including the profusion of airplanes. Because the personality of Godhead wants to enjoy varied pastimes, his devotees, who are all essentially equal on the platform of pure devotion, pure spiritual existence, assume different forms and positions in his service. Even the apparently inanimate things of Vaikuntha are of the same transcendental nature. Thus the airplanes, trees, houses, and so on are all perfect living beings, that qualitatively one with the Supreme Lord and with all other living persons. They all appear in whatever forms the Lord requires for his pleasure. Right? So it's not about the change and all that, this pleasure. It's about the affection that's happening, that then this is being used to show that affection. Right? It's not that he just needs newer and newer things. It's about the situations and the pastimes and interactions that are different with the devotees so that the variety of affection can be expressed. That's what Krishna is interested in, because he is rasa. And being unlimited, there's unlimited manifestations that can be there to express that rasa. Right? So even if all of them were going on at once, all the unlimited variety were happening at once, but he's still ever expanding, there'd be something new the next moment, something different. Mm-hmm. Right? So therefore, different aspects are brought out in different realms. So in sweetness, they have their particular variety of manifestations. In Vaikuntha, in majesty, they have their variety. Mm-hmm. You know, Dwarka will be a mix of the two.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So, like that, it's always going on. So they're all individual beings, and they're all just taking that role. 49. Sometimes that place appears full of riches, like gold and jewels, and sometimes its atmosphere appears chalk white, like a thick condensation of moonlight. Gold, jewels, and moonlight are among the greatest fascinations in the material world. Yet they only dimly reflect the infinite varied attractions of the Vaikuntha atmosphere. 50. Vaikuntha may be somehow understood only by its own spiritual influence, and not otherwise. Indeed, even the mind cannot grasp its form, right? Because the mind has its methods how it can grasp something, control something. But Vaikuntha being unlimited, that's not possible. So it can't be grasped. So, it's only by the Dham's influence that you can appreciate it. So by the mercy of the Dham, you can appreciate the Dham itself. Right? Because the Dham is also created from the Icha Shakti.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
That's also coming from there. Those devotees that are there, therefore everything else is there, because it's all devotees, so all the variety of transformations, all that's just done to please Krishna. It's all the Icha Shakti. Right? So it's only when, just like Krishna, only if he reveals himself the same way, only if the Dham, the devotees, reveal themselves, do you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And Maharaj, in the Vaikuntha planet, there is no past and future.
No.
It's only present.
Yes. It means the spiritual world's like that.
Yeah.
There may be the concept of, but they're only in the present, because there's no time forcing anything. So they're the spiritual time. It simply creates atmosphere.
So we cannot grasp this because we are
limited by time and space.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's there. You're talking about unlimited and no time. But it's more than that. It's that it's being spiritual is beyond the grasp of the mind. Right? Because the mind's material. So, therefore, being beyond that, it's only by the grace of the Lord and the devotees that they can be understood, right, through the internal potency. But it's not that because of the mind we can grasp it, just because we want. You know, so many other things, if we have a great focus and determination, we can study something, learn something, gain something. But it's not that that's how it works there. No, only if it's revealed do we know. Does that make sense?
There is no forcing.
There's no force. It's only affection. It's only love. That's all. One cannot understand the Lord of Vaikuntha and know the various locations of his pastimes. One can understand the Lord of Vaikuntha and know the various locations of his pastimes only when he reveals himself by his special potencies, such as Karunya, mercy. Devotees favored by the Lord can use this special intelligence to infer something about the nature of Vaikuntha by comparison with things they have seen. Touched and otherwise encountered in the material world. And devotees fully purified can perceive Vaikuntha directly. The external mind and senses, however, can never discern the spiritual existence. One therefore has no right to speak as an authority on that existence unless one has been granted insight by the Lord's mercy potency. Right? So therefore it says, through potency such as Karunya's mercy. So the materialist can never understand. The devotee, by that mercy, can get an idea, have an understanding based on their connection with, by inferring from the nature of things they have experienced. Yes. Right? So it's through inference.
Yes.
Right? But the devotees that are there, they have that full mercy of the Lord, so they can see it directly.
Yes.
Right? So in the so that's why we start with Shabda. We hear from authority. Whether we understand or not, it doesn't matter. We hear submissively. We'll get purified. Then, by the Lord's mercy, we can infer what it must is like. Mm-hmm. But it's only then when it comes to the point of perception that then that is the best.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense? So all things start like that. We start by hearing, yes. Then we can infer, then we can perceive.
Yes.
So perception is then the highest form. But it's based on hearing,
yes.
On Shabda.
Yes.
So the modern thing that is based on the senses, but they start there, like the modern sciences, they're actually the lowest level of consciousness.
Yes.
Right? While in Andamoy, it's the highest level. You're starting from the top and then coming down. So, mm-hmm. 52. When one sees those splendors of Vaikuntha, the happiness realized in Brahman at once seems empty, as if from sheer embarrassment on its own, it disappears. Right? So if one is even situated in Brahman by seeing the glories of the Dham, of Vaikuntha, then it's just out of embarrassment, from embarrassment, it just disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because the glories of Vaikuntha are just so great that the pleasure of Brahman doesn't compare. Just like when Gopakumara was in Mahakalapura, then he was, you know, to some degree impressed by the quality of the Brahman realization, though he wasn't interested. But still, just the situation, that unlimited bliss and everything like this. But here, it just disappears. It's not even a point. It's not even that it's less or it's, you know, like that. It just disappears. It's just not important.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Forget 51. We missed 51. You forget 51.
51.
Oh,
51. I thought he was saying, only if it's 51, then it doesn't disappear. 51 got to do with Brahman not disappearing.
Yeah, just 51. Over halfway.
Okay, 51. Except by direct experience, no one can rightly understand Vaikuntha. No more than this can I accurately describe. So he's given some indication that this Brahman, by the mercy of the devotees and the Lord, can get, through inference, get an understanding. That's what we're doing. We're getting an idea.
Yes.
You know, but actually how it is, you know, you have one airplane's more brilliant than the sun and everything else put together. You know, that's just...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But then we're just thinking the brilliance, but the point is you can see it. So that's the amazing, you know, so... A conditioned soul may discover the transcendental world of Vaikuntha, but only if he sees that higher reality for himself. By hearing from someone who has seen Vaikuntha, one may gain only a glimmer of understanding. Nonetheless, when a devotee aspiring for the Lord's service, hears the pure instructions of his self-realized spiritual master, and faithfully practices the discipline such a guru recommends, the devotee gradually becomes pure in heart. And when his faith sufficiently matures, he can see the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
Only by that direct perception does knowledge become perfect.
Okay.
Casual hearing, even from those who have seen the truth, is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
One must become a disciple of such an authority and accept the disciplines that lead to that self-realization. So just hearing it even here isn't good enough. You have to actually surrender and practice.
Yes. Yes.
Right? But hearing's where it starts.
Yes.
And then someone who is surrendered in practicing, that hearing then is so much more powerful. Right? So the more one surrenders, the more one becomes absorbed.
So surrender is actually what takes you from Sambandha to Abhideya?
Yes. 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 Okay. 52. When one sees those splendors of Vaikuntha, the happiness realized in Brahman at once seems empty, as if from sheer embarrassment, on its own it disappears. After a purified Vaishnava has realized the glories of Vaikuntha and its inhabitants, the prospect of impersonal realization loses all attraction. It simply disappears like the stars at dawn. Right? They have their brightness, they have their specialness, but at dawn they just disappear due to the greater light of the sun. So in the same way as the the happiness of Brahman, the attractiveness of Brahman disappears as soon as then Vaikuntha, you know, is approaching. So even at dawn means it's not even directly the sun is out. So just hearing about it, it starts to disappear. So even for the devotee that's hearing about Vaikuntha, already the glories of Brahman are reducing.
Yes.
Right. So if the devotees, new, you know, devotees ever wonder why it's Brahman's never seemed like anything special, that's why. Because just hearing about Krishna, the glories of it just automatically disappears. Like that. So it's never seemed special to devotees. Right? 53. Those who are self-satisfied, fulfilled in all desires, and free from all material concerns, who have renounced everything they know and possess, who have associated with Vaishnavas and have thus acquired the power to discern between the essential and the non-essential, it is they who enter the path of devotional service. When I went to Vaikuntha, that is what I vividly saw. Even though Gopakumar's student has been told that only direct perception can give him true understanding of the nature of Vaikuntha, he may still be anxious to have some other means to gain the special faith that the discipline of bhakti yoga demands. Anticipating this anxiety, Gopakumar here describes the logic by which one can know theoretically the supreme, super excellent happiness of Vaikuntha. Advanced mystics who have realized the supreme truth in its impersonal aspect sometimes abandon the happiness of Brahman for the opportunity to realize Vaikuntha. They leave aside both their knowledge and their perfectly developed realization to enter the path of devotional service. Once they experience the bliss of Vaikuntha life, they condemn what they formerly considered happiness in impersonal realization. This is evidence of the wonder of Vaikuntha. So just in case he's wondering, so just by devotional service, then he can gain it. Because otherwise he's thinking, well, how do you know, you have to get to the Brahman and then get, no, you just devotional service will take care of everything. 55. As I watched those persons come and go, I thought, what kind of Lord must it be who has such servants? After seeing such beautiful and opulent servants of Lord Narayana come and go through the gateway of Vaikuntha, Gopakumar could not help but imagine how beautiful and opulent must be Lord Narayana himself. Certainly a proper master should be superior in all respects to his servants. Right, so they're so amazing and wonderful. The Dham is so amazing and wonderful, you know. So all these devotees in all the different forms are so amazing and wonderful. So that must mean Krishna, who's the master, must be even more special. Right? Gopakumar is escorted into Vaikuntha, 56-63. Thus, I thrilled with delight as I waited in the gateway to Vaikuntha. I excitedly stood up and sat down, till the associates of the Lord returned, rushing back and escorted me inside. The amazing things I then saw, more wonderful than wonderful, even the thousand-headed Ananta Sesh would be unable to describe, even in a lifetime of Brahma. Right? And that's just what he saw. We're not talking about the unlimited things that are there. We hear Ananta Sesh talking unlimitedly, about unlimited. We're talking about just what he saw just then. Yes. Even a thousand mouths for the life of Brahma wouldn't be able to describe it. I arrived at several more gates, one after another, and at each I was met by similar doorkeepers who allowed me to enter only after announcing my arrival to their immediate superiors. But they got a good security there. As I entered each gate, I saw the guards offer obeisances to the local superintendent. So I assumed that he was the Lord of the universe. Overwhelmed with reverence, just as before, I repeatedly bowed down and recited prayers. Gopakumara was so eager to see the Lord that he mistook the Lord's glorious devotees for the Lord himself. As Gopakumara passed through each gateway with his escorts, they were met by the local manager, whose relatively greater opulence astonished him. He was becoming more and more eager to see Lord Narayan. So each gate, right, there's seven gates, so each one is more opulent than last. So therefore the guards and the you know, the manager of the gate is even more opulent also. Yeah, so it's a big system, right? And there's in four directions seven gates, right? You know,
yes.
So like that.
So Maharaj, why it is we can imagine the spiritual world, there is no enemies, there is no need of guard and this thing. It's like a pastime?
Just to make sure. Don't want a yogi showing up that shouldn't be there. That's just, it's part of the flavor. It means majesty, means that greatness. So that is seen in its greatest form in amongst the Kshatriyas.
Yes.
So it's a Kshatriya culture.
Yes.
So then that majesty is there. So you see is that Dwarka, Mathura, they're all Kshatriya cultures. So because they have that. Well, Braj is not.
Yes.
You know, just like, let's say, for example, Kardama and Devahuti in their mansion flying around the universe, mm-hmm. and all whatever is the, you know, best opulences in the universe they're visiting.
Mm-hmm.
But does it strike us as majesty?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or does it strike us more as sweetness?
Majestic.
Majestic? Yes. Sure?
No.
Means he's taking his wife around to see all these nice things. So is the relationship between them that of majesty?
No.
That he's the big yogi and he's showing off all these things?
No,
there's sweetness. So it takes on a different flavor. So you don't see it as majesty.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It may be opulent,
yes.
But the relationship between them, it's that closeness, that sweetness.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what you're... Maybe it wasn't properly explained.
He's even described he's a little bewildered himself when he creates the palace.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, whoa. You know?
Yes.
It's not really this move.
Yeah.
It's fun.
So it's, you know, so Shiva, you know, being a princess and, you know, big things are there, but being a Brahmin, then that's the relationship is there.
Yes.
So they relate as Brahmins, not as Kshatriyas.
Yes.
So even though it's so opulent, it takes on it. So Vrindavan, even though it's more opulent, Vaikuntha, it's just sweetness.
Yes.
But Vaikuntha, then the opulence there takes on the aspect of majesty. So then the culture of Kshatriyas is the best for that.
Mm.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Six to one. Finally, the Supreme Lord's compassionate men who were guiding me told me the special signs by which to recognize the Lord. They also taught me the prayers to recite and what etiquette to observe. Because in majesty, they follow all the rules. Everything's there. So it's just the way everybody likes it. Because it's considered if you do it right, that's going to be the best. Because he is the supreme. He's the best. Everything offered to him should be the best. Therefore, there's a system to make sure. Right? Like that. Gopakumara's escorts informed him of the unique visible signs of Lord Narayana, like the Srivatsa mark on his chest. Apart from these few special features, the Lord in Vaikuntha is indistinguishable from his devotees, who show the perfection of Swarup. Out of genuine sympathy for Gopakumara, his guides taught him how to behave in front of Lord Narayana. First to bow down, then stand some distance aside, palms joined, look down at the Lord's lotus feet. Refrain from moving or displaying bodily transformations and so on. So bodily transformations means you don't sit there and twitch and, you know, stuff like that. You just stand. Yeah. Very formal. Like that. So, I passed rapidly through many districts, wonderfully splendid, with all kinds of houses and gates. And then I entered the most excellent transcendental neighborhood. There I came to one palace at whose feet many others stood in attendance. A palace distinct, overflowing in greatness, where excellence seemed to reach its highest limit. Radiant like millions of suns and moons, it captured my mind and my eyes. Gopakumar sees Lord Narayana. Within that place, I saw before me at a distance the personality of Godhead, Lord of Vaikuntha. He sat at leisure on the best of royal thrones, a golden throne shimmering with the glow of many jewels. The cushion on which he sat was swan-white cotton, fine, attractive, spotlessly clean. And the soft, handsome bolster on which he leaned, his left elbow and upper arm, appeared like the full moon, cleansed of its spots. He was the presiding lord of blossoming youth. Since the entrance hall of Lord Narayana's palace stretched a long way, Gopakumar's first glimpse of the Lord was from a distance. But there the Lord was, sitting happily right in front of him, on a throne with cushions white as a full moon washed of its spots. Although he is the original person, he seemed ageless, as if in the prime of youth. He displays his opulences however he chooses, and so forever displays a youthful beauty that is among the most attractive of his opulences. Right. So the prime of youth means that the best point of youth. It's not that he's a little bit past that or a little bit before that. He's just in the perfect stage of youth. Right? And so, and because he can do anything, but this is what he prefers. Mm-hmm. So that's his, so that's why that aspect of youth and all these things is so special. It's because that's the age that Krishna likes the best. Right? You know, so that's the one that's glorified. Right? If you're younger than that, you want to get to that. If you're older than that, you wish you were younger again. Right? So that's the age that nobody worries about their age. Right?
Yeah. Can we say that it is 16 yet?
Yes. 16. So that would be the prime of youth. Yes. Like, you know, 29 is just at the end of youth. Right? You know, so 16 is what he uses. Right?
And after it's different category.
Yes, then it's different. Yes. Yes.
61 is not like 16.
Depends who you are. If you're Cher, maybe. But if not, yeah, no, it doesn't. Yeah. You could also try turning it upside down, getting 19. Yeah, might also win.
Just so he's walking on his hands.
Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't want 91, though. But, yeah, it's good. Sixty-six. The brilliant effulgence of a sweet, attractive limbs defeated the splendor of new rain clouds. That effulgence lent further grace to his garlands. Cosmetics, garments, already graced by jewelry, made of gold bedecked with gems. His four shining arms, long and well-built, enhanced the beauty of his bangles and armlets. Two yellow silken garments dressed his body, and charming earrings set off his rounded cheeks. Right? So this is, again, like what was talked before, it wasn't just the form of the Lord. It's about the individual aspects of the different form. Right? From a distance, it may look as one, but as the closer you get, then you see all the uniqueness of each particular limb. Right? So that means the closer you get, the more personal it is. Right? Yes.
When the soul goes back to the spiritual world, what happens to the Paramatma?
What happens to the Paramatma?
Is he still with him, or because he's there personally?
Okay. The example is given, let us say you get 100 pots and fill them with water and stick them all together out in the sun. So at noontime, how many suns are there in the pots? 100. How many suns actually are there? So if super soul is reflected, it means that expansion is there in your heart, but he's still one person. Right? It's not that there's unlimited paramatmas, there's one paramatma. and he just expands his that. So you don't have to worry that he'll be out of a job and what do we do, moping around.
Not drinking.
Yeah. Okay. And then, as we were flying, we went to the place of all the unemployed Paramatmas. It was a gloomy place. Nothing was happening. Yeah. Lord Narayana's arms appeared like the shining bodies of celestial serpents. His dhoti and upper cloth are yellow like the rays of the sun. Yeah, again.
Again and again.
Yeah. So the point is now if the Sanskrit used the word dhoti or not, it's talking about a dhoti.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing.
Maharaj?
Yes.
So it's always mentioned that the cloth of Narayana or the Krishna are yellow.
Yes.
And why it's only yellow? Or why we dress the deity in different cloths?
He likes yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He likes yellow.
He likes yellow. Yes. He never dressed in something with not yellow.
It appears he likes yellow. He's always called Pitambar. If you already have perfection, why do you need to change it?
Because when we dress a deity, it's not always yellow.
Oh, that's another thing. That's just, you know, we're trying to make nice and everything like that. Because we're dealing in opulence and that majesty. It means we're dressing Radha and Krishna, but they're relating to us as Lakshmi Narayan, because that's how we're relating to them. Because the only reason we're dressing is because Shastra says you're supposed to. Otherwise, we'd be at home in bed, you know, like that. You know, playing Sudoku or something. you know what I'm saying? So, there's basically is that yellow, because what color is Radharani? And then Radharani wears what color?
Mm-hmm.
What color is Krishna? You understand? So that's the whole point, is that. So that's why they stick to that color and they're cool with that color. Okay. '68. On his broad chest was a kustuba jewel, on his conch shell neck a string of pearls, and on his moon-like face a nectarine smile. His lotus eyes were alive with playful glances. The moon is famous as the source of the heavenly soma nectar, the rare sacrificial offering enjoyed by a few select demigods like Indra. Lord Narayana's face is another moon, and also full of nectar. The charming gestures of his lotus eyes are beyond compare. And so just how he glances and looks about and all that, just that is becomes very, very special. The great compassion he felt made his beautiful eyebrows dance. Rama, his ideally matching consort, standing by his left side, reverently offered him excellent pan to chew, which he accepted. The goddess of fortune would personally prepare Lord Narayana's betel nut and offer it to him with her own hand. Pleased with her service and the excellent quality of the pan, Lord Narayana would gracefully accept it with the tips of his right thumb and first finger, place it in his mouth and chew it contently, right? So he'll take it, you know. The goddess of fortune, Sri Rama, is the suitable consort for Lord Narayana, because she is the best of all women. She equals him in beauty and other good qualities. We should understand that the Lord's other consort, Bhumi, was also serving him from his right side. Right? So that's why it specifically says left, because that's where she's standing. And then Bhumi is on the right. Right? So Lakshmi is the full manifestation of all the qualities of the Lord. So whatever particular form the Lord is taking, then Lakshmi is the full matching consort. Right? And then Bhudevi will be aspects of that fullness that is in support of the other two. Does that make sense? So she won't have as full. It'll be great, but it won't be as full as Lakshmi.
Yes.
Right? Because she's there to assist them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She adds to the pastimes of the interaction.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. And then Nila, she will make arrangements. Right? So she's, again, something less, but she's making arrangements for their interaction.
Yes.
70. The color of that pond made his bimba fruit lips even more attractive, and their luster reflected on his teeth. Two rows of spotless kunda flowers. Right? So his teeth are so perfect and white that then the redness of the lips then reflects onto the teeth. So you get that slight, you know, that reddish reflection. Right? Illuminated by the glow of those flowers, his playful smile shone splendidly. And then the teeth, the brightness of the teeth, reflect on the smile and make it more. Right? So each thing makes the other, you know.
Like,
yeah, yeah. That's the thing. Everything goes on unlimited. We're just a one-spot thing. And then, you know, it's just like the earrings then glorify his cheeks, but his cheeks then make the earrings. And then, you know, the earrings, his ears. So it's just, it's unlimited. It's ever expanding like that. So there's no end to how nice it is. So you can see why Gopal Kumar can just stand there and be looking, and then he'll stand, he'll sit. Right? You know, so.
Too much LSD, but in a good way.
Yes. As they said, for this one you don't have to come down. His playful smile shone splendidly. His amusing words and gestures stole away the hearts of his devotees. The bimba is a bright red fruit whose brilliant color resembles that of the Supreme Lord's lips. The kunda flower is a small, pure white jasmine. 71. The goddess Dharani, holding in her hand a vessel to catch the remnants of betel nut, constantly worshipped the Lord with messages in sidelong glasses. And the Lord's excellent weapons, like Sudarshan, served him in beautiful personified forms, their identities marked by symbols on their heads. Right, so all of his weapons in that are all standing there. You know, so the conch club, disc, and lotus are there, but also sword, they'll all be there and all serving him. And you can tell by on their the heads or on the crown, there'll be something that identifies who they are. Otherwise, they're in personified forms. They'll look just like the other Vaikunthavasas. Dharani, or Bhumi, is the second goddess of fortune, whose expansion is the presiding deity of the earth. While Rama served Lord Narayana his pan, Dharani stood by to receive the remnants he would spit into a vessel meant for that purpose. 72. Servants stood all around him, worshipping him with great respect. Their appearance like his, their hands beautified by the transcendental items they held for his service, like slippers and yak tail fans. Sesha, Garuda, Vishvakshena, and other leaders of his many groups of attendants bowed down before him with devotion, stood before him with palms joined above their heads, and praised him in wonderful poetic language. Along with Sesha, Garuda, and Vishvakshena, other main servants of Narayana were present, such as Nanda and Sunanda, Jai and Vijay, Bala and Prabala, all of them together. Sesha and the others are called the Ganad Yakshas, or leaders of the various groups of the Lord's servants. Yeah, so in other words, there's groups of servants. Mm-hmm. They have a head.
Yes.
Right? So that's what we were saying before, there's a hierarchy. So there's always there, because in organizing it just makes something nice. Because if there's no hierarchy, what's so special about Krishna being the head of the hierarchy? Right? You know. Yes, we're all the same here, and the Supreme here, he's just all the same, just like us. And, you know.
Same body.
Yeah, yeah. You know, today's Tuesday and it's Kitchery Day and sun shining and I think that's it. You know, so that's the point. It's not nothing special because there's hierarchy. Then even though everybody's equal, but there's hierarchy because then it brings out the specialness of the Lord's position. Right? In the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 8.21, 16 through 17, confirms, Nanda and Sunanda, Jayant Vijay, Bala and Prabala, Kumuda and Kumudaksha, are all associates of Lord Vishnu, and so also are Vishwakshena, Patatrirat, Garuda, Jayanta, Shutadeva, Pushpadanta, and Satvata. So these are all your different group leaders, because you have your gatekeepers, but Jayant Vijaya will be at one set of gates.
Yes.
So then there'll be all those, that line, then there'll be the next set.
Yes.
74, yes.
Are these four groups of two, are those the primary of each of the directions?
That would be the first one in each of the directions. So
yes.
So each one is in a different direction. So Nanda, Sunanda, they're the first ones, Jayant Vijaya. We know because the pastime happened at Jayant Vijaya's gate.
Right.
But of them, the first gate is Nanda and Sunanda. Like that. Like that. Does that make sense? The eastern gate is Nanda and Sunanda.
Okay.
Right? But it must be the northern gate is Jayant Vijaya or
right.
something. Right? Because Brahma's going through the north gate. The Kshatriyas come in through the east gate. You know, unless it's the other way around, then once in the middle, something like that. But that's how you.
Sure.
They have different gates they come through. So it's, you know, so if somebody's coming through the one gate, you know, they're the Brahmins. If they come through another, you know, the Kshatriyas. Like Sri Narada's dancing and his expert singing and veena playing created such clever entertainment that the Lord and his two consorts, Rama and Tarani, sometimes laughed out loud. Lakshmi or Rama is also called Kamala, and Tarani is also called Tara. To add to the special ecstasy of his devotees, whose hearts were fixed only on him, from time to time the Lord extended both his lotus feet as a way of offering himself. In this way he exhibited his splendor. In this verse, the word Atmana of himself can indicate either that he offered his devotees his feet or that he offered himself. Of course, the Lord cannot literally give his feet away. Right? Yeah, be careful about that around here. Somebody grab him and take him home. You know, mercy! But his feet are the property of the Vaishnavas. This is described by Lord Brahma in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 3.8.26. The Lord showed his lotus feet by raising them. His lotus feet are the source of all rewards achieved by devotional service, free from material contamination. Such awards are for those who worship him in pure devotion. The splendor of the transcendental rays of his moon-like toenails and fingernails appeared like the petals of a flower. For those who worship the Lord's lotus feet with the desire to obtain them as their own possession, and who follow the methods of pure devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting, the Lord kindly reveals his feet by raising them slightly. He takes the trouble to do this because he cannot help but think of how to benefit his devotees. So that's the point. He's giving the opportunity of service, but also he's giving himself. Right, because then he becomes in their care. How they deal with him is then the environment he's in. right? You have to have a lot of trust to put yourself under someone else's care, and whatever they're going to arrange, you're going to take part in it, right? So then that's the point. So in this way, the devotees are his servants, but he is also theirs. So that affection and everything. So we see here, it's not that the loving exchange isn't great in Vaikuntha, right? It's through the medium of majesty, so it'll have a different flavor.
Yes.
But the reciprocation and everything is wonderful.
Yes.
But it's just difference in flavor. So Gopal Kumar being one from the flavor of sweetness, then there'll be it'll be so wonderful. But then there's that more wonderfulness of Braj. Right. The fullness of ecstasy this sight brought on made me forget what the attendants of the Lord had instructed me. I cried out again and again, "O Gopal, my life and soul!" And I ran forward to embrace the Lord. Right? He had told them all, you know, you stand there, your prayers, don't move, no transformations like that, and he's just doing transformations, right? You know, yeah. What's it? He's not standing there. He's not folding his hands, and he is transforming, right? Having chanted the 10-syllable mantra of Lord Gopal for so long, Gopa Kumar was used to worshipping the Lord with natural spontaneity, and now he impulsively expressed his love in a way unusual for Vaikuntha. You know, but everybody else will maintain the decorum, so they'll all be sitting there just very subtly, "Who's this guy going by?" Right? You know, just
what?
You know.
Weirdo.
Yeah, they're all looking at him. What? I'm spontaneous here. Forgetful of all ideas of awe and reverence, he ran forward with open arms to embrace his Lord. Right? You're supposed to have him close, and it's like, hey. Yeah, you know. So everything they told him to do, he's not doing. Some discerning attendants who were standing at the Lord's side held me back, and I was heartbroken. Otherwise, it would have blown it for the whole. See, if they hadn't done that, everybody would have been shocked, right? You know, even if it's something that the Lord would appreciate, it would completely blow the whole decorum there, right? You know, because then, you know, could they do that? You know, could, you know, it would, you know. I cried out in helpless distress again and again, overcome by my own excessive love, and fell unconscious in front of the Lord. With some effort, those attendants lift me up, and after some time, I regained consciousness. I wiped away with my hands the flood of tears that blocked my sight, and with difficulty, I finally opened my eyes. Lord Narayana greets Gopa Kumar, 79-91. Then I heard the Lord, that best of merciful persons, tell me in a deep, gentle voice, "Please come back to your senses, dear boy. Come here quickly." From the moment Gopa Kumar fell unconscious, Lord Narayana had been calling to him. But Gopa Kumar was able to hear him only after regaining consciousness. The Lord also told him, "Please give up this reverence for me. Let's talk together as friends." Right? Because, you know, it's just a movement. He is Krishna.
Yes.
So that kind of affection, he'd want to reciprocate that.
Yes.
But, you know, it's Vaikuntha, so one has to be careful. I then felt the highest limit of joy. I danced all around as if seized by madness and stumbled about. But with great endeavor, the Lord's servants calmed me down, and at last I awakened from that trance. Hearing those words from Lord Narayana drove Gopakumar apparently insane. In truth, however, this quote-unquote insanity was the perfection of clear consciousness, in which the one who suffers feels the ultimate extreme of happiness, right? Just fully absorbed in the Lord. Right? The Supreme Lord said, "Welcome, welcome, my dear boy. I am fortunate, most fortunate, to meet you here. For so long, I have been eager to see you." Hoping to calm Gopa Kumar, the most compassionate Lord greeted him as a welcome guest. The Lord stated honestly that he had been waiting for a long time for Gopakumara to come to Vaikuntha. Right, because in between he's been going all over the place. Right?
Yes.
You know, through all the heavenly planets, Brahma Loka, and then...
But that's still... Mm-hmm. That's still only a...
Yeah, but still. It's, you know, if Lord Chaitanya is saying blinking of the eyes is like 12 years or more,
yes,
you know,
yes,
so then... You know, it also is your time in the material world before you even come to this point.
That's also there.
You know, that's a few more blinks.
Yes.
some serious blinks, yes, here, right? Yeah.
Dharma Swami was telling us that that Krishna is so affectionate to Sudarshan, the personality of Sudarshan, that he doesn't like to use him to kill the demons because just that moment that he's gone, he feels separation from him.
Oh, okay.
Just a slight...
So that's why he waits until the last moment.
So for him, it feels like a long time.
Yeah, so he'll do other things first, and then only at the end will he get out of Sudarshan. Okay, yeah, so his point there is that just even that moment, because he just goes, cuts off the head, and comes right back, so that's you know, maybe a second or something or less, but he feels separation. Yeah, you saw there, all his weapons were all there with him, all the associates. So he's there with Boo and Neela on each side, Sri and Boo on each side, and then all the other associates are there, and then also, you know, so they'll have their particular formation. So the Vaikuntha Yogpeet will have a particular, you know, design, you know, that'll be somewhat different than ours, like that. The principle is the same, but you know, there'll be this, how you say, yeah, so many subdivisions and all that. So they'll be all there in a particular pattern, and then like that. So. My dear friend, you have passed many lifetimes without paying any attention to me at all. Yeah, that's on the more blinkage side,
yes,
right? For so long, hope had had me dancing like a fool, thinking, perhaps in this lifetime, or this, or this, or this, he will finally turn his face towards me. These lifetimes, Paramatma's thinking, maybe this life he'll, right? You know, so we have to remember, we're thinking, you know, do I get serious or not? But Krishna's sitting there waiting, hoping, well, maybe this lifetime, maybe he'll get more serious.
That's why neophytes, when they take up the process, they get immediately this burst of ecstasy.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Paramatma's
actually happy. Finally, finally.
Finally,
okay. Even though Gopakumar had forgotten his Lord for many lifetimes, the Lord had never forgotten him. The Lord wanted Gopakumar to know this, and also know how eager the Lord had always been to regain the association of his devotee. So by knowing this, you understand the relationship. Right? You know, it wasn't like about time you got here. You know, it's like, you know, it's just like,
you know what time it is.
Yeah.
Where have you been?
Late again.
It's cold. Dinner's cold.
Yeah. So it's a matter of the relationship. That intimacy, that specialness. So the Lord has that with all the devotees. So just let him know, so that he knows how dear. So then that's there. But the point is it's out of the point of reciprocating, right? He's not going to now punish him for having ignored him for so many lifetimes. He's immediately going to reciprocate, right? That's the masculine principle. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
84. But I could find no pretext on which to bring you to my abode, dear brother, and still follow the timeless laws that I myself have created. And still follow. Excuse me. Did I say follow?
Yeah.
Okay. Since the Supreme Lord is all powerful, why didn't he simply find a way to go bring Gopakumara to him sooner? The Lord establishes the laws of the universe, which are enunciated in the Vedas and other scriptures, and he chooses to adhere to his own restrictions. So that's the thing. He establishes them, and then he follows. That's pastime, right? Children make up a game. They make rules for the game, and they follow the rules of the game. And then next time, you know, the game's different. The rules are different. So the point is the fun is in the game is following the rules. But you've made up the rules. Right? So that's why for the Lord it's pastime. For us it's not. Because exactly. You know, we're having to follow His rules. Right? Right? So then, so for Him, is He is the Veda. He establishes the Veda. But one of His qualities is He always follows the Veda.
That's why we have a tendency to make up our own rules.
Yeah, we try to make it up so that, you know, it comes from us. That we're going to, because if we're the Supreme, we make up our own rules for our own pastime.
Yes.
Right, and then we find out that, you know, maybe we're doing that, and then we're, you know, how you say, we're thinking I'm independent, I'm everything like that, I'm making up my own rules. You know, the camera's up close, and as it pans back, then you see there's that we're a football, and then there's this whole other group there that's, you know, kicking us around the field. Right? You know, so that's the we make up our own. I play by my own rules, yeah. As long as living entities want to control and enjoy their own world, He does not interfere. Only when they show by calling out His names that they want to return to Him does He again reveal Himself. In previous lives, Gopakumar had never chanted the names of Lord Narayana, even unintentionally or in jest. Had he at least vibrated a shadow of the Lord's names, he could have been delivered, like Ajamil. In any case, now Gopakumar is finally returning home. Right. So, previous to this life, he never chanted, neither in jest nor unintentionally anything. He just never did. But somehow or another, this lifetime, by the grace of his guru, then he got all perfection. So by grace of guru, so then the important thing is that it's not that, you know, so many lifetimes we've been doing and so many like this. You know, so it's a matter of, by getting grace of guru, that's all that matters. You know, so it doesn't matter how many lifetimes before or not we've been involved, then we're able to
yes.
progress. Right? That's why then this whole thing of the Lord, what's the word? Yogeshwara, right?
Yes.
About the Lord and the devotees is so important.
Yes.
Right? So that respect for the Lord, the devotees, that's what's going to make everything work, make everything happen.
Yes. But Maharaj is very intense, Gopakumar, in chanting the mantra.
Yes. So therefore we see he moves forward very quickly.
Very quickly.
So that's the thing. The more we're intensely absorbed, the quicker it'll go. It's that simple. It's that easy. You know, of course, getting where we want to chant like that, that's the hard part.
Yeah,
but the point is if we do it, immediate results are immediate. So if we desire, we want pure devotional service, we try to chant purely, we try to please the Lord, then immediately the results are there. Problem is we do that for a short time and then we stop. You know, it's like we'll be chanting there very seriously and then, you know, the brahmachari walks out, you know, like that, puts the key in the thing, opens the shutter like that, and the maha shop is open, right? You know, and then suddenly, you know, that intense focused chanting changes and now we're taking up another form of intense
another
devotional service.
Also Bhagavad service.
Yes, also, yes. But I'm just saying, you know, like that. So as long as we can do that all day, only being distracted from one intense full service by another intense full service, you know, and then while we're eating, then the Guru Puja starts, so then we go in for the Guru Puja, you know, then, yeah. Rather than it's Guru Puja and we're out eating pizza, you know. They still make pizza? It still goes on there?
Well, they call it pizza.
Whatever. I'm just saying, that pastime go on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. It's Nitya Lila.
Nitya Lila, okay.
Diversity.
Diversity. So we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura.